Mr. Orsi, thank you so much for joining us on the Fandango Family Room.
A pleasure, thank you.
Sure. Do you remember how old you were when you first started watching Star Trek?
I was 7 years old. My uncle, Richard Rabaul, who I named the captain of the ship on which Captain Kirk was born, was named after him in his honor, and he got me into it as a little kid.
Now, he got you into the TV show, I would imagine?
Exactly.
And was he able to see his name on a ship or named after him?
Yes, he was very upset that I killed him in the first 5 minutes, but at least his name has been immortalized as the captain of the Kelvin, Captain Richard Rabaul.
Now, I'm curious, at that age, what appealed to you about the show, and was it something that stuck with you right away, or were you introduced to it and then maybe came back around to it?
I was introduced to it and then came back around to it. I remember at the time what appealed to me was that it didn't look like any other TV show. It was bright, and it was in space, and it just, you know, it was different than any kind of a drama, like any kind of a doctor or a lawyer drama. It was very inventive stories. It was almost like the Twilight Zone in space or something, and I remember just enjoying watching with my uncle. And then, as a teenager, came back around to it when The Next Generation was on, and that show was on contemporaneously with, you know, my growing up, so that one I got to see its first run.
Were you a Kirk guy or a Spock guy?
You know what? I was always a Spock guy.
Were you?
Spock was always the moral center of the show, and his logic appealed to me.
Now, I ask because I'm always curious to ask, especially screenwriters, because you guys are essentially the germ of the idea, the root of the idea. When you're writing these stories, and you can even go back to, you know, just getting this franchise up and running, how much thought goes into the fact that, you know, you do want to appeal as a summer blockbuster, as a popcorn thriller that appeals to all four quadrants? How often do you guys think about the fact that we want to sort of be able to get this material across so that it is exciting to kids, to young kids, so that when parents are bringing them, because parents are obviously going to be the fans and they want to introduce the younger generation to it, how much thought goes into, let's make sure that this is still accessible to a younger audience?
Some of the greatest experiences that I remember from my childhood, and Alex would say the same thing, my writing partner, some of the best experiences were sitting in a theater, and I just have such vivid memories of the experience of seeing a movie with my mom or my dad or my grandparents or my uncle. And so I think it's very important to keep that alive, and that's why sometimes you can get a little bit too fancy and too clever when you're writing a movie, and you can forget that you want to make it accessible to everybody. So that's often at the top of our minds, and that's why we strive for fun. You know, for example, some fans, if they were in my place, would say, well, you can't have the Starship Enterprise underwater. but the kid in me goes, I just want to see the Starship Enterprise rising out of the ocean.
Exactly.
You can't ever forget that kid part of you, and you can't, you know, as Fox said in Star Trek VI, logic is the beginning of wisdom, not the end. And so our job as screenwriters is not to let logic police us too much and to just do what we want to see and then justify it through the story.
Well, I think that that's colored a lot of the projects that you've chosen from, you know, especially the Transformers films. I think that they're filled with visual spectacle that is really going to appeal to all audiences.
Exactly. And if you were just pursuing logic, you might not get to some of that spectacle because you say, well, we can't do that, or, you know, it's not believable, et cetera, et cetera. But when you put on your kid hat and you put on your childhood memories, you suddenly have the guts to go for grand imagery and grand fun, and that's our job.
Well, you know, hearing you say that makes the first trailer that we were able to see for Ender's Game make a lot more sense all of a sudden, because it's definitely filled with a lot of big box thinking visual wizardry.
Well, in that case, we're very lucky that we have a book to go off of, so, you know, we can't claim too much credit for the inventiveness of the imagery there, other than to say that we didn't rule it out, and we wanted to make sure that even though the book is got some serious themes and has some adult narrative in there, it's still ultimately about kids in space, and you got to make that fun.
Absolutely. Okay, jumping back into the Trek universe just for a little bit, because we tried to wrestle on staff with coming up with the right approach to this about if you're a parent and you loved Star Trek and your kids have never seen a single Trek, where should you start? Where do you think is a great entry point to the series as a whole, or even to your films? Would you start with the films that you worked on and then maybe go backwards? Would you go as far back as a TV show? I mean, since you worked on this, I'm really curious as to what your thoughts are.
It's funny. I actually think that the Star Trek movie from 09 that we did is potentially a good starting point, because we were surprised to find out when we got this job. First of all, shocking that we got the job, but then to find out that the childhood of Kirk and Spock had never really been covered. We were able to tell an origin story because, frankly, it hadn't been done before.
Right.
So to see Spock growing up and to realize that he's half-human and to realize he was born on Vulcan and had a hard time because he was half-human, and then to see Kirk and to see his childhood and to see what a troublemaker he was, that hadn't been covered before. And so it's actually a pretty good starting point, because it gives you a sense of who they were early on and who they became. And I feel like it's consistent with the earlier movies. And you get to see how Kirk and Spock met, and you get to see how the crew came together. And that story, I think, whether or not you consider it an alternate universe, I think most of the events of the first half of that movie could have happened in any continuity, and it's a pretty good introduction to Star Trek.
And I think one of the best things about it, too, is, you know, if it hooks them, they don't have to sit around and wait too long for, like, the next few stories. There are so many more than that they can continue to explore. That's exciting.
Exactly, and they can know exactly where they all came from, so it gives them a context that I think we were pretty, you know, loyal to. We didn't sort of reinvent any of their character traits. Those were all things that we reverse engineered from having been fans for 45 years.
All right, excellent. I'll get you out of this one, and I'd be kicking myself if I didn't ask you about it, because I'm a huge, huge Spider-Man fan. And I won't ask you details about the sequel, but I just want to know, because Mark Webb is so busy on Twitter, and he shares a picture a day. Have there been things that he's shared that you just sort of say, don't give that away just yet, or, you know, keep that under your hat for now?
Yeah, just about everything, frankly. We tend to want to preserve the movie-going experience until you get into the theater. However, we're not silly enough not to recognize that in this day and age, that's hardly possible. And I am happy and proud enough of what he's doing that I don't mind the little appetizers that he gives out, because I think it gives you it makes you hungry for the movie. So I'm of two minds. On the one hand, I wish we'd seen nothing. On the other hand, big deal. It's cool to see stuff.